from the great halls of their house, there are assembled three who hope to one day be the world's greatest driving heroes. Created from the cosmic legends of the universe comes our team captain, the Vision, Bill Fisher, and their soon-to-be Wonder Woman, Vicky Fisher, and our Captain Marvel and head flight trainee, Jennifer Scripchunk. Their mission, to fight injustice, share what is right and wrong, to get you out of your house and come out racing with them and serve all mankind. They are the Garage Heroes in Training Team.
Welcome to the Garage Heroes in Training Podcast. I'm going to be one of the hosts for this episode. We've got a guest. Who else is hosting?
I'm Vicky.
And I am Jeremy.
Jeremy! I love Jeremy.
We have a very special guest tonight.
We do.
Most of you listeners that race lemons, you may know him.
You might.
Some of you don't. If you don't, you need to get to know him.
Apparently, he is a partner in the Hoopties documentary, or at least he pushes it like he's making tons of money, which we don't think anybody in documentary business makes tons of money, but, you know, Netflix got money. Mm-hmm. Never know. Could help. He is a lemons racer for many, many moons. He races Volkswagens, sometimes several each weekend. Welcome to the podcast, Tom Lomino.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on tonight. Very exciting.
Well, you know, it's way too much fun. So Tom, people probably know you seeing you in the paddock area. People probably know you driving on the track. But sometimes, especially if you come in a little bit later, you often realize that the person you know in the paddock is the same person who's driving that car, and you don't put it together. So could you kind of help people out and give them a guide to, like, this is me in the paddock and this is my car out there, and what kind of messes you get into, sir?
Yeah, well, so I've been doing lemons since 2009. So I've done, I think I counted the other day, I've done 38 races in that time period. But a lot of people will recognize me actually from my old car, especially people who've been around lemons for a little while, because I was running a Volkswagen Fox for many years. It was yellow and white. It was painted up like an Audi Quattro, and was known for lifting the rear wheel off the ground, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And the car punched well above its weight when it ran. I mean, we top 10 that car a couple of times. We won Class B in 2013, I believe, or 14 at Jersey. 2014 at Jersey, we won Class B in it. 10th overall in a, again, a Volkswagen Fox. So a lot of people knew me from that car. And I had been, you know, obviously I've been around for a while. But we hit the limit of performance on that car. So then I went out, actually at my wife's suggestion, and bought a 94 Volkswagen Golf. So a lot of people will recognize the Golf because it's all black, but it's got some orange and white stripes on it. When it runs, it's really fast. When it blows up, it's usually pretty spectacular. So it could go either way. And usually I stick myself right in the front of the garage, so you can see me either, you know, happy and whatever, or most of the time you see me standing over the engine crying, thinking about my bank account.
Yeah, we have been at races where Tom left. Come back, Tom. Come back, Tom. He just wanted to do the intro. That was it. Thanks for coming on the Garage Heroes in Training podcast.
That's right.
Well, standing over the engine, looking at it, sad, thinking about my bank account, that ended his night. He's like, he's all done.
I guess it affected his bank account too much and he didn't pay his cable bill.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, since I'm going to be editing this one, Facebook, but if he doesn't have internet, that's not really going to. Oh, here he comes.
There you go.
So I don't know what just happened, but right when you were responding, it crashed.
That's fine. We've edited podcasts before. So Tom, we've been at the racetrack with you since we started, and I do remember one time where your car was sacrificed to the gods of racing. However, you served as a parts donor for some newer racers to our fine fellow Lemons paddock. And I believe you were instrumental in trying to help somebody get back onto the track and, you know, maybe some YouTube glory.
Oh yeah, well that was with Rich Rebuilds, I believe it was. Yeah, so Jonah and I, they needed help. They had this Volkswagen Jetta that was a real piece of trash, and they had a mechanic with them. I used quotes around the mechanic because the guy didn't seem to really, you know that much. And
not a
so
big Volkswagen guy.
He wasn't a big Volkswagen guy. So you know, one thing led to another. We ended up giving him the fuel pump out of my car, which was still working because we liquefied the internals of our engine. The rest of the car was fine, the fuel pump and whatever. So yeah, we gave him the fuel pump. We helped them bleed the clutch. We offered them some more things that would have probably gotten on the track a little bit longer, but they didn't really want to totally listen to our advice. I think they wanted it to be more ridiculous than it really was, but you know, they got back on the track and they got to get some good, video out of it. So it was pretty cool. There's been a few times where Jonah and I have spent our weekend. It was one at Thompson where I think the same year we blew the car up, and we literally spent the whole weekend walking around fixing other people's cars. Just because, I don't know, we had nothing better to do.
And didn't want to leave the racetrack, right?
We didn't want to leave the racetrack. We were having a good time. We were drinking some beers and, you know, we were like swapping cylinder heads for people and stuff like that. So yeah, you know, I've been around a long time. I am not actually a mechanic. I've kind of self-taught, but I know enough about cars to be pretty helpful in most cases. And obviously I've done a lot of paddock engine swaps and things like that. And so I know, you know, kind of the order of things and how to just get it done and, you know, what's good enough to survive and things like that. Cause sometimes people get caught up, you know, at the track on the minutiae, like, oh, I can't get this in, I can't get that in. It's like, I can't get the power steering pump on. Well, cut it off and loop the thing and just get the car back on track. Stuff like that.
Yep. Oh, we're going to get the field expedient repairs in a moment. But
okay. No. Since you had mentioned that, I'll wait till there.
Okay. I've never seen her wait on a podcast before. This is new. See? She's got paper, people.
I'm writing down my questions.
The bulldozer has some ability to hold it back. Just hold it back.
Turned over a new leaf.
I'm trying.
she's like a Star Trek ship without any, you know, shields.
Yeah.
It just comes out.
Occasionally, I'm that red guy.
Yeah, sometimes.
The red.
So, Tom, let's get back to a little bit about you. How did you get into racing? What did you do? What brought you into the racing atmosphere? And when did that bug grab a hold of you and bite you?
The bug bit me when I was a child, a very young child. I mean, there is every picture of me as a kid. I have a car on my hands and I wanted to race cars forever. I would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and watch Formula One on ESPN at like 6 years old. You know, watching, you know, races in, you know, in Europe, obviously that was when most of the F1 calendar was in Europe and whatever. You know, NASCAR, IndyCar, I was a big IndyCar fan. Really, my dream was actually to go to the Indy 500. I wanted to be an IndyCar driver and go to the Indy 500. And F1 sounded great and whatever, but that was really like the dream. You know, my parents, we didn't have a lot of money when I was a kid. My dad had like a business and whatever. And, you know, my mom worked night jobs and stuff. So I really had no opportunity like a lot of, you know, kids that get into becoming professionals these days in terms of, you know, being able to go kart and stuff like that. It just wasn't there. So when I graduated high school, I bought myself this Trans Am, and I got into autocross. And it was funny. I was actually at school talking about going to an autocross with my friend, and this woman, her name is Eve, overheard me. And she's like, oh, me and my husband actually run New York Region SCCA autocrosses. You should come out. Oh, yeah, great. Okay. So I went and I started doing autocross and actually became the New York Region SCCA tech inspection director for many years. So I did autocross for a while. And then in 2003 or so, 2003, I'd made a bunch of money, you know, working. I'd saved up money. And so I went to Skip Barber Racing School and I thought, oh, great. I'm going to go to Skip Barber. I'll get my competition license and then maybe I'll turn it into something. I'll try and get some more money together or whatever. So I went to Skip Barber, 3-day school. I did their advanced school. I did lapping days. I went to Pocono. I went to Daytona, went back to Lime Rock. So I spent a whole bunch of money with them driving. I ended up just meeting people and whatnot. And I ended up finding a team, a Pro Formula Mazda team that was looking to expand to a second car. And so they were like, hey, you know, if you could get the money together, you can drive this car. I was like, awesome. Okay. So I hired a sponsor hunter and I put a sponsor package together. This was like 2005. Sponsor package, sent stuff out, made phone calls. I even talked to some pro drivers. I talked to Alex Tagliani. I don't know if you know who he is. He used to drive Indy cars. I actually met him and talked to him. He gave me a bunch of advice. I just kept trying, calling, emailing, just trying to get money together because I could nowhere near afford the $250,000 I needed to run the season. That went nowhere. And I didn't get any of that money together. I spoke to a couple, you know, I think I ended up on a list because I got some phone calls from like some Grand Am teams. They're like, oh, we're looking for a third driver for Daytona. And I don't know if you know what that's like, but basically that you give them, I mean, this is obviously like 15 years ago. You give them, you know, 15 or 20 grand to be the third driver or fourth driver at Daytona, which means you're in the car at night. If the car even survives, if the car blows up, you just spent 20 grand for nothing. You know, that's the kind of thing. I didn't have 20 grand. It didn't happen. I was going to do a test day with them. They're like, oh, you do a test day for like 3 grand. I couldn't even get the 3 grand together. It just wasn't happening. So anyway, I kind of gave up on that after a couple of years of trying and money and whatever. So 2009, one of my autocross buddies posted on Facebook or MySpace or something. He's like, I want to do 24 hours of Lemons. And this was Lemons has started in 2007. And so they did in 2008 a race at Stafford Springs, Connecticut, and they came back 2009. So he had a race car. Actually, I'm sorry. Let me correct that. Because the person I'm talking about is actually she. It's Jackie Andrews, who you've had on the show before.
Miss Jackie.
Mm-hmm. Miss okay, so Jackie.
I've known her since I was 18 years old. We've autocrossed together. We've known each other forever. Her current Civic was based off of an older Civic that she had that she was ready to kind of junk. We were going to build a Lemons car out of it. She couldn't get enough people together to build a Lemons car. I, at that point, had a little bit more money and I was buying a new Camaro SS. So I had this Volkswagen Fox as my winter beater. And I went back to her and I was like, hey, I had this Fox. It runs, it drives, and I don't need it anymore. Let's make it a Lemons car. So we got our autocross buddies together and we built it into a Lemons car in my driveway. Now, Lemons rules back then were a joke compared to what they were now. So Rob Leone built us like this cage that was kind of whatever cage for like $300. And we put the car together. We brought it to Stafford. And we went around Stafford Springs for a little while. That woman, Eve, that I mentioned earlier, her son, Wes, drove with us. Her husband was there with us. He was like our crew chief or whatever. Wes was on the track, and all of a sudden he hits the brakes going into turn one, no brakes. And luckily it was like an oval, so instead of going in, he just stayed on the oval. And the brakes caught fire, and there was just flames coming out of the front of the car. Oh, I forgot also, we accidentally put a little too much oil in it, so the first lap, me going down the main straightaway, there was this huge plume of smoke that just smoked out the whole track. That's actually a pretty famous Lemons picture of me just smoking down the track.
I don't think that was on accident.
Yeah, so it was pretty funny. But Lemons was a joke. I mean, Lemons was a joke back then. I mean, the cars were just garbage, and it was just more whatever. So brakes caught fire, whatever. We brought it back. We got new brakes on it. They caught fire again. We got like 15 black flags. That was back when they would just keep giving you black flags, and they would just make stuff up and whatever. I was much different back then. So the car kind of survived the race. So then the next year, they were back at Stafford again. And we're like, let's do it again. We upgraded the brakes, whatever. And the car stayed on track a little more. We did a little more damage to it, whatever. The next year, Lemons went and expanded tremendously. So they went to New Jersey. They had two races at Loudoun. And we also started doing Summit Point, which went away eventually. But so we really got serious. We brought the car to Jersey. They immediately told us our cage was disqualified because they had revamped the rules and went way more serious on everything. We redid the cage. A lot of my autocross buddies had gone. Some new people had kind of filtered in at this point. Jackie had only lasted the one race. It wasn't really for her, which I can understand. Back then, like I said, it was a joke. So, and she's a real serious racer. So now, obviously, it's way more serious. Like, yes, the joke aspect's still there, but, you know, it's much more, the cars are built better, the racing's a little bit better, you know, whatever. But yeah, Lemons expanded, and we expanded and built up the car, kept building the car. We, you know, upgraded the hell out of it. We ended up dropping a 2-liter from a Jetta that I bought, the whole Jetta, and just chopped up, put it in there. And yeah, and that's, and I just kept doing Lemons and kept doing more and more Lemons, and, you know, occasionally winning races, winning classes, I should say. And, you know, top 10 in the car when it didn't blow up, but we also blew the car up a lot.
So,
Yeah.
How did you pull off, and this is no shot on you, how did you pull off a car that fits you and Jackie?
Right? I was thinking the same thing.
Because
those of you that have never met Jackie is what, 6'6"?
6'6". Yeah.
6'6", like somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
And Tom, you're what, 5'9"?
Yeah, 5'8".
Five eight.
So
okay.
we built the car around her, although I will say it was a bit tight, you know. So her knees were like, you know, like right
either
there.
Side of the steering wheel.
Yeah. I mean, she was fine. She was fine with the seat all the way back. And we had like an old, this is again, 15 years ago. So the seat was like not as fancy as the ones now. Uh-huh. You know, we had this like open back seat, whatever. So actually back then you could still run a stock seat, but we had like a Sparco of some sort, but it didn't have, you know, it was the smaller whatever. So yeah, we had a lot of space. We had the slider in there and all that. And, it worked. It was more, I'll put it this way, it was more comfortable for me than it was for her.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way. But she fit.
Because we'd love to drag her out. We just can't figure out how to get her in a car. We tried all the cars we had when we went to the, where was that? Was that Grid Life?
That was Grid Life at Jersey. Yeah. The only thing she's going to fit in is the race truck.
She might fit in my Golf. And we have discussed it again, and she was kind of like, maybe, you know, whatever, because she's seen, like, I post a lot of in-car video on YouTube, and she's seen, like, she's like, oh, okay, this is just, God, I'm like, look, it's totally way more serious, because it was a long time where she was like, get the hell out of here, and she was trying to convince me to just stop doing Lemons and come race, you know, real cars with her, mm-hmm. And whatever, and still does occasionally, so, but she's seen my videos and I've explained it. She's like, all right, well, it looks a lot more serious now. I think we actually built the Golf around my friend Phil, who's a little bit shorter than Jackie. And yeah, I've got XL Daytona seat in there and everything. So she might fit in the Golf with the seat all the way back. She might.
See, our general philosophy is, you know, why not do both?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would if I had more time and whatnot, I would totally do more than just Lemons. But right now, with two little kids at home and whatever, you know, disappearing for 3 weekends a year is what I can do. Maybe 4, you know, but that's about it.
Yeah, you like keeping your head above your shoulder. Yeah, that's a good plan.
That's pretty handy to have someone who knows setup to be on that team with you, Jackie, the way she is.
Oh, yeah. And we chat. I mean, we chat all the time about like different stuff like that, brakes and things and whatnot. So yeah.
She's really good. She's so good.
Yeah. No, I always has been. Always, you mm-hmm. know, known more than me, than most people I know, I will say.
She is incredibly impressive. Unbelievably impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we used to live like 5 minutes away from each other. I've moved a little bit further away, but we used to live like literally 5 minutes away. I borrowed a trailer to pick up the Golf when we did the cage and stuff. Not the Golf, the Fox and stuff. So, yeah.
Hmm. So what kind of cars are you personally driving or have driven recently?
So my daily driver is a 2020 Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio, which is the most fantastic car I've ever owned. It really is. I mean, you know, I'm always like for the longest time, I wouldn't buy anything without a manual transmission other than my pickup truck. And I was like, you know what? I love Alfa Romeos. I have another Alfa Romeo, which I'll discuss after. But I was like, I got to try it. And even the transmission is fantastic. It's fantastically tuned. The paddle shifters are great. It blips on the downshifts. It's loud. I put a Krapovich exhaust on it, so it's even louder. And it's just a crazy, crazy car. It gets, looks everywhere. It's bright, you know, bright red and whatever. And, but just so fantastically well designed in terms of driving dynamics, handling, steering, braking. Literally, it's just an absolutely amazing vehicle.
Sounds very bougie.
It's a little bougie. Yeah,
it's really, bougie. Really pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Thank you. Yeah, it's great. But I do have another Alfa Romeo that I don't really drive because it has no engine in it. And that's, I have a 91 Alfa Romeo 164. So that was my uncle's. He had fortunately passed away 5 years ago. And he had three Alphas. He had a 71 GTV, 94 Spider, and then he had the 91 164. So my cousin, wanted me to, I offered to help her out to get rid of the car. So I sold the GTV and the Spider, which were worth a, you know, good chunk of change. 164 was his daily driver. It only has 83,000 miles on it, but it was kind of beat. So I gave her $1,500 for it. And I'm like, I want to restore it. I want to fix it up. So I did the whole suspension in it and whatever. I coilovers, brakes. I did all the brake lines in the car. It seemed to run okay. And so, you know, flushed the radiator, you know, oil, all that stuff. I mean, it was leaking oil, but all Alfa Romeos leak oil. It's just part of the charm. But I redid all the suspension bushings, everything under the car. Lowered it about an inch on the coilovers, drove it to the inspection shop, got it inspected, drove it to the alignment shop, got it aligned, driving home, car overheats, blew the head gasket.
Oh, no. That sounds painful.
And so it's been dead ever since.
Oh.
So for those listeners out there, our buddy here, Tom, he has some issues with engines. They just don't like him for some reason.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they like him a lot and they want him to come play with them. You know, I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
They just won't stay in the hood.
So that thing sat in my dad's driveway for 2 years. And then I had a Camaro SS, 2010 SS I bought new. Once I got the Giulia, I like never drove the Camaro anymore. I was like, this is just stupid. It's money sitting in the garage. So I sold it, brought the Alfa here, and took the engine out. And now it's been sitting with no engine for another 2 years. So, yeah.
You'll get it, though. It'll be there.
It'll be there someday.
You just don't see a lot of Alfa Romeos around.
Well, no. I mean, they left the country in 95. And to be honest, after so in 91, they introduced the 164. They didn't obviously have a lot of dealers. So they didn't sell a whole ton of them anyway, because, you know, they had their reputation. And then, you know, less each year. By 95, they only sold 200 and something 164s here. So there's not a lot of them. And then, not only that, they did, like, everyone thinks it's a law. It's actually not a law. So everyone believes it's a law that companies need to provide parts for 10 years after after they've completed selling a car in the U.S. It's actually not a law. I thought it was, but it's more of a gentleman's agreement. It is a law in Europe, but it's not a law here. So when they left the country, they were like, see you later. And a lot of people got stuck. And so you have this car, you know, it was a luxury car, depreciates like a rock. The shocks were $1,000 each because it had adjustable shocks on it. It has a button. So, you know, people would have a couple blown shocks or whatever and total the car. So not a lot of them survived. They had some problems with the sunroof. With the sunroof would leak and it would rot to the back. It would leak into the back of the car, so the back right corner of the car would rot. My car is all rotten there. And actually, to be honest, I'm not 100% sure I'm going to actually finish rebuilding the 164 because of that reason, because there's a lot of rot back there. I did fix the suspension mounts, but and it's sitting inside, it's in my garage, but it's pretty bad, to the point that the car isn't really worth a whole ton of money. Like, even if I made it perfect, it's only worth about 10 grand. But if it's going to cost me that much in just rust repair, like, I can't weld. I have to have a body guy come weld. I have a new quarter and whatever. So same thing. These cars would rot back there and then people would just junk them. because, you know, it's hard to get parts. If you're the alternator or starter goes bad, you got to get them from Italy. You can't get them here. Like, they're gone. Like, there's just certain parts that are just gone.
That
here.
Would make sense.
The rear trailing arms, I had to import them from the UK. Like, it was a whole bunch of parts that I just had to, like, scour eBay, or, like, I got this guy in on the Alpha Forum in Italy who looks for stuff for me sometimes when I need it. I had three different places to get these three engine mounts, you know, stuff like that. So,
and yet you still keep going back.
Well, the good thing is I haven't started putting the car back together. So I have all this stuff in boxes in my attic, right? So right. Worst case scenario, if I can't fix the car, I have stuff's like basically ready to sell. I could go right on eBay.
There you go.
probably make money on it. I have a custom built aluminum radiator, which cost me $1,200, which is pretty cool. Worth more than the car, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So, you know,
wait to labor of love.
I'm just saying, any thoughts on a non Volkswagen, non Alpha? Maybe, you know, just, you know, see how the other half drives.
Something slightly more local.
Look, I was an American car guy up until I bought the Fox. I had never owned something that was not American. I've owned five Camaros, six or seven Firebirds Transams. I had a Buick Grand National. I had an 89 Turbo Trans Am at one point, which was an absolutely ballistic car. I mean, it was the same horsepower as the Alpha, but you got to remember it was a 1989, right? So right. You had a live rear axle, you know, big fat tires, and the thing, when it shifted, would spin the tires. It would actually trip the tires when it shifted. Big, gigantic downpipe. The guy I bought it from took the cat off, so the thing sounded like an F-16 going by with the turbo, giant turbo. Boost turned up. It was a 22 pounds of boost running C16. He did, my buddy who owned it before me, did an 1199 at 108 miles an hour, which at the time was insane. Now you could buy a car off the showroom floor to do that, but that we're talking in 2002. It was berserk.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, 16 inch tires were big, and, you know, 245 was a monster. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, so it was a crazy, crazy car. But yeah, up until the Fox, I had never owned anything that wasn't American. I've owned like something like almost 30 cars. And
would have thought you would have gone back after the Fox and the.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, you'd think. Now, I expanded my horizons. That's what it was. Volkswagen got me to expand my horizons. I still do. I have my pickup truck's a Chevy. I got a Chevy 2500 HD pickup to tow, mm-hmm. you know, the car and trailer. My wife drives a Mercedes GLE. I had a Mercedes E350 before this, for the Alpha. And, I don't know. I actually found Volkswagen got me to found a little bit of an appreciation for European cars, to be honest, as much as, you know, look, I mean, there's a lot of bad things about Volkswagen, the Fox, especially, like there was some things I was just like, why is this like this? Why? But the cool thing about Volkswagens is they go together like Legos. Right. So I bought this when we decided to. So the base engine in the Fox is 88 horsepower. Which is horrible. And then there's actually a restrictor in the exhaust from the factory that to make it slower than the Jetta. They did that on purpose. So you take this restrictor out and it gets it up to about like 90 something horsepower. It was like, wow, really fast. When we decided, we're like, look, this 90 horsepower is not going to cut it anymore. I bought a complete 94 Jetta with a blown transmission. We pulled the ABA 2-liter out of it. And literally all the holes to mount it, to put the, because the Fox is longitudinal and the Jet is transverse, but all the holes to put the engine mounts to mount it longitudinally were on the ABA block. So we just ran a tap, bolted all the things on, and it bolted right to the transmission and dropped right in. Other than having to cut a hole in the hood to fit the intake, it literally just went in there, and the accessories fit and the belts fit and boom.
Drive shaft, you know,
that, too. And that was it. What's that?
The drive shaft too.
They go into the drive shafts into the transmission because it was transverse.
All right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. The transmission stayed in the car.
Transmission stayed. I mean, we took the transmission out, but yes, you could pull that motor without taking the transmission out. I actually had gotten it down because we did about 7 engine swaps in that car before the ABA. I had gotten it down to like an hour where I could actually pull the motor by myself in an hour from that car. We blew up a lot of Fox engines before we were like, all right, let's get to something a little better. And the ABA was killer. The ABA was like a game changer. Then the car was obviously, we went from 90 horsepower to 130 horsepower. Cause we may have done a few things inside of the ABA. I mean, whatever, but
I don't know what you're talking about. Did this break up again?
Bad connection here or something. But yeah, we were on about 130-ish horsepower, and the car was like way, way, way better with that. And that engine lasted, and we ended up pulling that engine out and putting it into the Golf, and that was the original engine in the Golf when I sold it. And we had a spare engine that we dropped in there. We just grafted together, you know, wiring harness and dropped it right in and sold it like that. Yeah, we had a lot of adventures with that car. A lot of different, you know, like I said, 7 engine swaps. So,
I remember being passed by the Fox a few times at our first race, and it was like, oh, okay, we're getting beat by that too. Okay, that's fine.
But again, we top 10. We came in 7th overall at Jersey one time in that car. In the Fox, and not only that. So actually, this is a good story. This was the Jersey 2012. Or maybe 2011. I don't know. It was 2011 or 2012. I can't remember. But anyway, 6 laps into practice, we blow the head gasket. Smoke everywhere. Like, oh my God. So we pull it into the paddock area. We were running on Lightning. Take the head off. Yeah, it's all messed up, right? Somehow we find this Napa in town. He gets this head gasket, head bolts, whatever. We need a machine shop, though, because the head was warped. He sends us to, Napa's like, oh, there's this guy. He's here. He was like out in the middle of nowhere, almost in Pennsylvania. So me and my friend Phil, we drive out to go to this guy. And it was like in the woods. We thought we were in Deliverance. I was like, well, we're going to get murdered here. And we drive to the back of this guy's house. He's got like this scary looking barn. And I'm like, yeah, we're definitely going to die here. Definitely going to die. And I noticed behind it, there's a WRX, brand new WRX. And I'm like, and then I look and there's a whole bunch of Subaru engines on the ground. I'm like, oh, this guy must know what he's doing when it comes to resurfacing heads. So we go into this thing, the shop, and he's got these giant belt sanders. And he's like, yeah, I could do the head for you. And so he literally takes the head. He goes, how much you need off? I go, I just need a flat. He goes, all right. Bing. Looks pretty flat. Puts a straight edge on it. He's like, yeah, $80. Here you go. $80. And that's it. He just belt sanded the head. That was it. And we bring it back. We worked till midnight getting the car back together, but we did. We put the car back together, put the engine back together, put the, you know, head back on, whatever. And came in 7th overall with the car. Car ran like a top all weekend perfectly. And we ran that head for, we ran that combination for a long time. I can't remember. We eventually blew it up, and we might have got a hole in the radiator or something. But yeah, that lasted a bunch of races like that. Yeah.
So, do you have a when you get on track? Do you happen to have a philosophy? Do you talk to yourself in a way that amps you up?
No, I mean, I kind of amp myself up beforehand. I always stretch before I get on the track. I was a runner in high school. I did track in high school. I was reasonably okay. I wouldn't call myself great or anything at it. But, you know, I did a pretty quick mile, pretty quick 2 mile at high school. And so I just like stretch out and kind of clear my mind. And then I get in the car and just breathe and get around. I don't really talk to myself that much.
Well, what are your opinions about being on track, like your thought process of racing in general? Like, do you have a mantra or like I've said it before, mine is I paid to be here too, so I don't let myself get muscled off a track. I paid to be here too.
A lot of it is, you know, I don't get to drive as much as you guys do. I mean, I'm only on track 3 times a year. So three races, I should say, 3 races a year. I mean, we do a lot of driving in those weekends. I mean, you got to realize like you're doing 7 or 8 hours of racing, right? Including practice in a weekend. But, you know, I get out there and I'm just, you know, I have to kind of force myself to remember certain things like you paid for the whole track, use it, you know, stuff like that. Like, you know, especially with my corner exits and things like that. You know, I'm big on like spatial awareness, but I don't really need to talk to myself about it. I just need to always keep my wits out. And a lot of people tell you, I feel like I'm very gentlemanly on the track. I don't want to, you know, because I realize, and one thing I try to keep in mind is that, you know, for the most part, most of the people out at a Lemons weekend aren't rich guys. You know, some of us, I mean, when I started at Lemons, I was broke. Like I was using my last dollars to get on the track, right? And so destroying my car would put me in a serious financial situation to get another car, right? And I don't know, you know, the guy next to me, ahead of me, behind me may not have the money if they destroy their car, you know. And not only that, Lemons is obviously very strict, so you know, if you do hit each other, that kind of ruins your whole weekend. And again, I only do 3 weekends a year at this point in my life. So, you know, if I ruined that time, but my car has proven it can be very competitive in the top 10. So I don't want to waste that or ruin that. So I just try and, you know, race everybody hard, give everybody room, you know, pay attention to your surroundings and keep paying attention to your surroundings. The guy that you're battling with may not be the guy that you're really fighting with. He may be 100 laps behind you, maybe 100 laps ahead. You don't really know because you don't have this leaderboard in front of you. And or he may be just overdriving the car or whatever. You can't let that kind of mess you up. You just got to drive your race, use the whole racetrack. And you know, we do this for fun. So if it's not fun and you're uncomfortable, then maybe time to stop.
I like it. Mm-hmm. So Tom, obviously, you know, you have young kids as I do, so it's very difficult to get out there on track. Do you have any goals moving forward, bucket list items that you want to accomplish, different series other than Lemons, you know, tracks, cars, things like that? Do you have anything that you are trying to accomplish for the future? Any goals on that?
Yeah, you know, I do want to expand my track repertoire. I mean, I drive on Daytona once in Skip Barber cars, which was unreal. It was an absolutely unreal experience doing 150 miles an hour in a tiny little tube frame car, drafting somebody. Fantastic. I don't necessarily need to get back there, but I'd like to try, you know, I've done probably a billion laps around Thunderbolt. I've done a billion laps around New Hampshire. I've done a billion laps around Thompson. I would like to try some other tracks. I like to get back to Lime Rock. I enjoyed Lime Rock, Watkins Glen, Barber. Barber is probably one of my favorite tracks. Never been on it, but Barber is a track that I would love to try out. I don't know that I have time to drag my car there, but so the original plan for this year was Jonah purchased a 2005 Golf from Conover Motorsports. And so we were planning on running that in this new series, Northeast GT, that came out. So Northeast GT was actually supposed to have their first race in 2 weeks at Lime Rock. They're supposed to have a practice weekend, I believe, this weekend or last weekend, and then their first race in a couple of weeks at Lime Rock. Unfortunately, they just canceled both events. And the reason they canceled it was apparently, so the practice day was at Canaan. Apparently Canaan got a lot of snow. And so the track is like messed up and, you know, it's just not really ready for an event yet. And then they said that a lot of people weren't really ready to run Lime Rock. So they pushed the Lime Rock race to November. I don't know if they're doing a practice day. So the whole season kind of shifted. Now I don't have time to do all the races, but I want to do maybe one or two with Jonah. We may go to Palmer in July, which is another track I'd like to try. I heard it was really good. And I'm really want to go to Watkins Glen. So Watkins Glen is at, they're having a 10 hour race, 5 hours and 5 hours at Watkins Glen in October, the weekend before Lemons. So I would probably skip the Lemons race and go to Watkins Glen, assuming that comes together or whatever. So, you know, I'm trying to ease myself into it. But again, I'm probably going to stick to, for the most part, most of my current New England Lemons schedule for a few more years, just, you know, with the kids and whatnot. But once they get a little older and it's a little easier for me to be gone for a little more time, I might want to, you know, jump on a plane and try, you know, Laguna with another team or something like that. But generally, I kind of limit myself to about 5 hours tow from home, just because I need to be able to go to work on Monday. I need to be around for the kids. I can't be, you know, whatever. That's why I don't go to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is like a 7 to 8 hour tow for me.
You can't be that parent.
Yeah. I don't want to be that guy. I really don't. A lot of my friends can't believe that I'm still racing. Like when I got married, they're like, oh, everything's gone. You're going to sell your car, whatever. I told my wife, I'm like, look, this is you're marrying the race car. This is what I do. And so we kind of made a deal. As long as we didn't end up in a financial situation where I can't race anymore, you know, because we can't afford it. Or, you know, if I get into like some sort of massive accident, you know, that would be the two kind of things that would probably stop me. Although obviously, I mean, the chances of getting into two massive accidents, especially as an amateur, is pretty low. But, you know, that was kind of the deal we made. So,
yeah, I was going to mention pit race. You could do is just drive there. Don't tow there.
Right. I could probably drive there. It's still 7 hours from my house, but yeah, I could probably drive there, you know, and not having the trailer would probably make it better. But
yeah, it's a lot different just driving than towing, because the towing kind of beats you up a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
And pit race is my favorite track.
It is a fun track.
Don't you own a wall there, Jeremy?
No! I do.
Just a small piece. Just a small piece of it.
Right, yeah. Along the front, too.
Yeah. I
after the first turn.
I even like pit race more than I like Sonoma.
Wow. It's, you know, pit race just has everything.
It does.
It has everything on the track that you want in a racetrack.
Well, that's if you've ever driven. So we used to run with Lemons Shenandoah at Summit Point, and I loved that track. That was a lot of fun. Now, it's not a great racetrack. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of room. There's not a lot of great passing zones or whatever. But I mean, Lemons, you pass everywhere anywhere because it's just such disparity in speed. But the track is fantastic. It's super fun. It's got a mini carousel that you launch yourself out of. So it's pretty cool. I think I probably have an in-car video on YouTube. If you look on my YouTube, obviously it would be many years old because we stopped going there in 2014, I believe, because there was too many deer strikes.
Yeah.
But that track is a blast. It's really a lot of fun, you know.
I think Jeff Wakeman likes that one as well.
Yeah.
I haven't been there yet. They're all fun though. So Tom, the first step in recovery is knowing that you have a problem. So why Volkswagens, Tom?
Because they're amazing.
Well, I have to be honest with you. The reason why Volkswagens was not that I picked Volkswagen, it was so I needed a beater car. I had a Corvette at the time, and I needed a winter beater. And I had a winter beater, which was a 92 Pontiac Sunbird with a 3.1 V6. And that car would have been a fantastic Lemons car.
Yeah.
It was actually surprisingly fast, 5-speed manual, and that car, it had no options, roll up windows, whatever. But I used to live in a town called Freeport on the water, across the street from a canal. And one day there was a big tidal surge and water went right up under the car, seawater, and just car was like halfway underwater. It actually drove out totally fine, but then a week later it just died. Mm-hmm. And it happened to die near my friend's shop, and he put it up in the air and he's like, Are you high? Like the wiring harness, everything was just oxidized. Wow. And so that was the end of that car. So I needed another beater car for the winter. And so I literally went on Craigslist and I was like, manual transmission under $500. And this Volkswagen Fox shows up. So I drive out to see it. This kid wanted $500. He's just this like stoner kid. I look at the car and it drove fine and it looked a little whatever, and I was like, this thing's a piece of crap, I'll give you $300. He goes, sold. I'm like, all right, $300. And I drove it. It was my mm-hmm. It was my daily driver for maybe two years. And then I sold the Corvette, and it was my only car. And then because I was anticipating, I ordered the Camaro, and then I bought the Camaro. And the Camaro, I put all season tires on it, and I was like, I don't need this thing. And that's where it went into Lemon. So literally, if there was if I had found a Honda Civic for $500, I would have bought that. That's really where it came from. And then the only reason I stuck with Volkswagen was then, you know, once I was kind of done with the Fox and I wanted to, move to a better platform, which the Golf is a great platform because it's got a huge aftermarket. That was the problem with the Fox. I had to import. There's a guy in Brazil, because the car is actually made in Brazil, who made performance parts for it. And I used to order these bushings. I had adjustable strut tops, stuff like that, from this guy in Brazil. It was hilarious because they'd never deliver them to my house. I used to always have to pick them up from the post office because they'd always, customs would always open them up, thinking, I don't think they were drugs or something like that. So
this guy keeps getting a lot of boxes.
Yeah. So I think they thought it was drugs or something. I was shipping cocaine in or whatever. But yeah, so they were like finding these shitty car parts. So I'd get the car parts, whatever. So yeah, when I was done with the Fox, I already had learned a lot about Volkswagen. A couple of guys who had kind of joined me were Volkswagen guys. So it made, and I was like, I don't want to waste this engine that I put really good oil into.
Like good oil, the Mexican stuff?
Really good oil. It was really, really good oil. I didn't want to waste that engine. I wanted to save it. So we moved it over to another platform, which is a great, is really a great platform. And the car actually, when we put it in the Golf, the engine was great right up until we got a hole in the radiator and one of my teammates wasn't really paying attention to the temperature gauge until it went nuclear. And that was the end of that.
Whoopsies. So we just had a guest on that talked about Subarus and the good, bad, the ugly, how to not mess them up. Volkswagens also have a little bit of a reputation on the track. They're fast, but they also tend to go kablooey. So between you and Jeremy, you both have probably broken what you can break and fixed what you could. And I think you're probably getting to the point now where they're pretty, knock on wood, reliable. Endurance racing is tough. So what do you guys think makes the Volkswagen, I guess the Golf is, or the GTI is kind of the weapon of choice for you two? What do you think you need to do to survive out there for somebody who's looking to get into it? Maybe they have one, or maybe they love them, or maybe they're just, looking for a $500 stick and they find one, whatever.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
Hey, Jeremy, you know those race cars you're busy building?
Yeah, I do. I got one that I'm looking at every day.
You know what I don't see you working on?
You don't see me working on the amazing Sentinel system yet.
That's true. It would take all of 10 minutes for you to have one.
And it's very quick and easy to install.
It is. It is. And we could watch you when we are not at the race with you and see how you're doing. And then we can call you up when you get out of the car and tell you everything you did wrong.
And I love that, because so many years I've been driving and not been able to see what I'm doing.
I know.
And now we can.
I know. You know what I'd like to do with the video? My most favorite thing is I take the video and I load it on YouTube and then I send it to my coach and say, look at 26 minutes and 17 seconds. Look at this one lap and tell me what I can do better. And every single time, you know what they say?
Everything.
Exactly. Precisely. So with the Sentinel system, you get instantaneous feedback plus useful feedback that unfortunately is accurate for my driving.
I think it's accurate for all of our driving.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's probably true. Yep. But you need to get one in your car, sir.
Yes, I do. And with the discount code that you're going to tell everybody, they can save 10% on this awesome system.
Yep. Trouble-free. I haven't had an issue getting video every time we've gone out with the Sentinel. It's always worked. Can't say the same for some of the other systems we've tried. So I don't know. It's on the podcast notes down there. Don't do it while you're driving, though. We like to have our listeners live. It's good.
Well, I would say, I mean, and I think Jeremy will agree with me, the 5-cylinder, the 07K, which is what we moved over to in my car, and I basically copied Jonah. Jonah did it first in his car. We both had built 16 valve motors. We both failed spectacularly. Jonah worse than me, because his ended up being completely trash, where mine I was able to fix and sell. The 5-cylinder 07K, it's a little heavy, but the damn thing is bulletproof. I mean, it really is a strong motor. It makes good power. They're $500 old. That you can get a used one, if you need to blow, if you blow one up, it's $500 all day long. And that's kind of what I came to when it comes to lemons. is you need to find a car that has plentiful engines that make decent power that you don't need to do anything to. We have never taken a cylinder head off of the 07K. If we blew a head gasket, I'd throw it out and buy it. I'd put another one. I wouldn't even change a head gasket in it. It's not worth it. It's not. It's literally not worth the time, the bolts, the head, you know, the cylinder, the head gasket, whatever. You could, you'll spend that much in parts as you will just getting another $500 one. And there's tons and tons and tons of them out there. So if you were going to go Volkswagen right now, get yourself a 2005 Rabbit. And you can get them for $500 sometimes. And as long as you keep the engine cool and you use the proper belt, you know, we had some issues with it launching the belt. Jonah had some issues with it launching the belt. We kind of got that down to a science. Really, the best thing is to purchase the RS3 dampener pulley. And you put that on, put the belt on, it never launches a belt. And we just change the belt every race just in case because it stretches. You know, that motor is solid, is a solid Lemons motor. And we did, Jonah blew one up and I blew one up. And we both figured out the reason why was because we were running them lean. And the reason we were running them lean is because we swapped them into a Mark III Golf and not realizing that they needed way more fuel pressure than we expected. So we run 85 PSI fuel pressure. We both have adjustable fuel pressure regulators in there. And we figured out we need to run about 80 to 85 to 90 PSI. When you do that, the motor's fine. But even, and I put an oil cooler on because it tends to get the oil gets a little hot. But that's also a function of the Mark III chassis that I'm running. If you ran it in a newer Golf, the radiator is different, there's more space, so on and so forth, you may not have run into that oil heating issue that we ran into.
One thing, just in case we do have somebody new, when you say a good amount of power for an endurance race, we're not talking 400, 500, 600, 700 horsepower. We're talking enough to get you going. There's a sweet spot because you've got to balance fuel usage, pit stop with speed. So you can't just, you know, make a drag car into an endurance race car because you'll spend all day in the pit lane.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's 200 horsepower about. Yeah,
that 07K is right around 200 horsepower and very close in torque when you put it in that car. And it is with a lightweight Mark III chassis, like what we were running in Jonah's car and what Tom's running in his. Thing is a rocket ship.
Yeah.
Because it's light.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the best part is you blow it up, you get another one for $500.
Well, so we blew Jonah's up. When Jonah and I built his car and then we swapped over that 07K into it, we actually blew it up because none of us really thought about it. We were like, oh, it's a newer motor. And we never pulled the thermostat and the thermostat stuck. So it overheated. But I'm going to tell you right now, that car overheated for 7 hours before it blew up, and it still didn't blow up. I drove it off track. I was like, hey, something's not right with this thing. We're losing power, and it seems to be running, you know, badly. And I drove it off of track into the garage, and that's where it finally said, nope, I'm out. I'm done.
Well, that was – our first race with the 07K in my car was Loudon in 2022 or 21, I don't remember. I didn't have the oil cooler on the car. It was cold out, but we ran the whole weekend with low fuel pressure and everything. And so our oil temperature was, and I didn't have an oil temp gauge. What did I? I don't remember. Our oil temp, everything was hot. Oil temperature was hot. We were running the oil temperature really high. Everything was high, and it ran the whole weekend like that. And it wasn't until we got to Jersey the next year that it blew up. Meanwhile, I mean, we were beating the hell out of it. And we were running it lean the whole time. So it was lean for an entire race weekend before it blew up. Which is extremely impressive. And actually, our tuner, Connor over Motorsport, who sold Jonah the other car, he showed me a guy who had overheated one to the point that it melted the globe, the overflow globe, sucked it in and melted it like into a little fist. And he put a new one on, started right up, and drove, and it's perfectly fine. Perfect compression, everything. No problems at all. So, yeah.
So between the two of you who've beating your head against the wall a little bit. Recommended. Obviously, I think we've already talked about good radiator, good oil cooler, that specific engine. It sounds like we've got the VW K swap going here. It's got a K. I know that. That's all I know. I'll take notes.
Oh,
later.
It's big. It's big. People are putting them into 944s now a lot. There's a couple of Lemons guys doing 944s with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else do you need to do?
Well, to keep that motor alive, that's really it. You know, you get the pulley with the belt, you get a good radiator and an oil cooler, and it'll go. I mean, if you wanted to go crazy, you could turbocharge it. As you said earlier, I don't know that I'd recommend that for a Lemons race or any racing for that matter, except for maybe sprint racing.
Yeah, some sprinting, maybe not some endurance.
Yeah,
racing.
But I wouldn't endurance race a turbo anything, turbo 07K. But you got to realize that motor, what's interesting about it, there's a couple interesting things about it. The first one is that they basically a version of that motor is in the RS3 and it's 500 horsepower. And it can handle it. And there's really not that much different about the bottom end. It's really a lot of it with the head and the intake and obviously the turbocharger. That motor is also derived from the V10 in the Lamborghini Gallardo. It's literally half a Lamborghini V10. And so they took the design from Lamborghini. Lamborghini put that together and turned it into this motor. And the cylinder has the same part number. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. You look up these Lamborghini parts and the part numbers, Volkswagen part numbers start with the three digits. They start with 07K. And all these Lamborghini part numbers start with 07K. So it's literally the same half a motor. There's a lot of development, a lot of money went into that motor. So it is. It's just there's not a lot you have to do to just keep it. The other thing is we use a lot of, and you guys use the race capture. So I have a lot of sensors monitoring everything. But again, once I put that oil cooler on, that really everything's solid. I have a toggle switch on the cooling fan just for those really nuclear hot days to make sure that the cooling fan's on all the time. And you know, we're running it, you know, the coolant temp, the oil temp's like 220, the coolant temp's like 185. You pull into the pits and you open the hood. It's not even like hot. You don't even have that like crazy heat coming off the engine. It's just fine. It's great. And we run Rotella oil, Rotella T540 in there.
Okay.
It's honestly probably one of the best motors that Volkswagen has ever produced.
Wow.
Ever. It really is. It really, really is.
So how easy is the motor to actually work on? Like the Civic is a very easy motor to work on. I would say the 86 is a more difficult. The Toyota 86 that we have is more difficult only because it's just the way it's kind of packed in there. The accessibility to certain things. How is it with the Volkswagen?
I would say that in the car that it comes from, it's very easy to work on. In the car that we built, Jonah's car and Tom's car, it's a lot more difficult because it is stuffed in the engine bay with very, very minuscule amount of room.
There's probably not even half an inch between the engine block and the passenger frame rail. So there's certain if you have to work on the accessories, there's a couple, you got to kind of figure out a couple little tricks to getting them out. Like if you got to unbolt the alternator or whatever, because the bolt comes out and it's like poking into the frame rail. So you got to like unbolt it, tilt the alternator, unbolt the bracket, lift the bracket, like it's a bunch of stuff. But, you know, again, how often are you changing an alternator? Not really. You know, the water pump is actually surprisingly not that hard to remove. But again, it's really tight, but you can, again, move some stuff, or you unbolt the engine mount and you just lift the motor a couple inches and, you know, you could get it out. So to Jeremy's point, it's a lot easier to work on in the car it's in. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I would never change a head gasket on this thing. It's probably faster to swap the motor because it uses a timing chain and the timing chain's on the back of the motor. So in order to take the head off, you got to get the timing chain off. You probably could do it with the transmission still attached. There's a guy on YouTube. I saw him do it. It seemed like a real pain in the ass. I think I could swap. I could remove the motor from my car in about an hour, hour and a half tops. So I don't. I just don't see doing a head gasket on that motor. Not when you could buy another one with under 100,000 miles for $500, you know.
Yeah. Swap a motor at the track if you need to get back on track, and then save the motor and rebuild it at home at your leisure. But other than that, it's really not worth working on like that.
Well, to be honest, I priced out rebuilding it. And by rebuilding it, I mean head gasket, head bolts, because the head bolts are one-time use, and all the other blah, blah, blah around rebuilding it. And you're going to spend close to $500 anyway. So it's kind of like garbage. Just throw in the garbage.
Unless it has a special Mexican oil.
Yeah, unless it has special Mexican oil. But it's not, I, you know, my philosophy around lemons has changed quite a bit, where it used to be almost like build a motor. I would never build a motor for lemons ever again. I would never build a motor for endurance racing ever again. Find the best junkyard motor you can and use it until it blows up, and then find the next best junkyard motor you can. And that is how you should approach lemons. Never spend money building a motor. First, yes, you can get away with it. Nobody's going to pop the freaking cylinder head off or whatever, or pop the valve cover off and catch you. Yes, you may get more horsepower, but you will blow it up eventually. And then you will have burnt whatever amount of money, and it doesn't even, and whatever. Or you're going to be chasing down some sort of exotic thing that you can't get at the racetrack, or some sort of this or some sort of that, or you're going to end up stuck. And it's just
sounds like a Volkswagen issue. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's an any motor issue. That's an any car.
Motor. Any
that's
motor.
An any motor. Never. How about we talk about our friends over at Sorry for Party Racing? How many times they've built a crazy LS motor for their Camaro, and it blows up all the time. But every time they put a junkyard motor in it, it runs the whole weekend.
Well,
yeah. I mean, you got to be selective racing is about not worth your it. junkyard motors, but endurance racing, you know, lemons, whatever. It's just not worth it. And I'm at the point I would never ever build a motor for lemons again. It's one thing if you have a motor that's easy to swap a head gasket. Like if I was still running the older, you know, four cylinders, you could do a head gasket on those things and whatever. So yeah, you buy a one with 100,000 miles on it, sure, swap the head gasket. That's fine, but otherwise, I would never do anything more than basic maintenance types of things on the motor. You know, nice spark plugs and coils or whatever. That, you know, easy things you could do on the outside. That's about it. And things that you would swap over to your next junkyard motor. You know, that's about it.
Mm-hmm. So I know you know that we had a certain person on earlier, Jeremy Berger. So you were kind of involved with and on screen for the Hoopty stock. So how did that start up with you?
So Jeremy emailed me. I don't know. I don't remember. It was so long ago. Cause you gotta remember we filmed that in 2019. Right. So that was, yep. it was like eons ago, especially after COVID. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he emailed me like kind of out of the blue, and he was like, yeah, I'm looking to follow some teams. I heard you're well known around the series. I'm like, yeah, I guess so. You know, so why not? I don't know if he maybe had talked to Chris and Chrissy first or Yuri first. I don't really know who he spoke to first. But you know, I was like, yeah, sure. If you want, let's do this. And, you know, we talked a few times, and then he came, you know, and started filming. He filmed us at Jersey, filmed Yuri at Thompson, I think. Chris, he filmed 3 p.m. at Thompson and Yuri at Loudon. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because we actually had a guy, a documentary guy, follow us many years ago, back in 2011 or 12 or 13. I don't remember exactly. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to put all this stuff together. And then it just never happened. And we never saw a single minute of video, never heard anything again. I think I'm still friends with the guy on Facebook, though. But, yeah, it never really worked out. So, you know, Jeremy followed us and he did all this stuff and whatever. And I was like, yeah, all right, I'll see you when I see you. And then he's like, all right, I want to come to your house and interview. Oh, yeah, did the interviews, showed him the car and whatnot. And, you know, it worked out. And once he put the film together, you know, COVID was going on. He did the film circuit. He wanted to start shopping it. I actually know a guy who's who owns a distribution company, distributes a lot of documentaries and stuff. We talked to him. He didn't really have a good deal for Jeremy, so Jeremy went a different route, but you know, it worked out. It was pretty cool.
That's cool. It's a great movie. I mean, we downloaded it. I think we bought it on three different services because we were in different places and we all bought it about the same time. So we've done our duty. We've supported them. It's
appreciate it. Yeah, I like to point it out there. You know, a lot of people ask me, you know, a lot of family members, friends on social media, they ask about racing, and I'm like, did you see the movie? That's why I always bring it up. Because it's funny, because I'll see like a family member we're friends on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And I'm like, oh, did you see my movie? And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I post about the damn thing all the time. And, you know, so then, oh, yeah. And then they watch it. They're like, oh, wow, that's super cool. So they're really, it's people. That's why I always bring it up, because like every time somebody sees it, they're like, wow, it's pretty awesome. And, you know, I just want people to kind of know, you know, what we're doing. It's not just this. It's not a joke, you know. It's real racing. The cars are crappy, but it's real racing. It's real relationships, you know, real friends. I mean, I've become very good friends with all of you, obviously, with Three Pedal Mafia. You know, I don't know if I've ever told you guys the story of Yuri, but the Yuri story is actually kind of funny.
We've got extra tape this week, so we're good.
Well, so we blew a motor up in the Fox, and I found what's called a 2A. Jeremy may know what a 2A is. It's out of an Audi 80. It's a 2 liter, but it's the same exact size as a 1.8, which the 1.8 was in the Fox. So I swapped this 2A. I wanted to swap this 2A in. I had to swap the head and whatever. And I have my Facebook page for the team. And so out of the blue, this guy messages me, Yuri. And he's like, I know Volkswagens. I can help you out. I'm like, by the way, I have no money, so I can't like pay you to help me out. Because I've had people like, oh, you want a paid mechanic? I'm like, I can't even pay myself.
Yes, crazy? I want one.
Yeah. So so he comes to my house and we rebuild this 2A. We put my head on the 2A, whatever. We do the whole thing and we put it all together and we put it in the Fox. He gets it running great and everything's great. And I bring it to Loudon. He couldn't come to Loudon. He was busy or whatever. I get to Loudon, we do 6-7 laps of practice and blew a piston to pieces. and so that was the end of that motor. So it was funny because we bring it into the garage and I just start drinking. So I get drunk, right? And I don't know how, I was talking to some guy, I was trashed out of my mind. This guy is like, I'm like, I could take that cylinder head and off in 30 minutes. And he's like, I don't think you can. He's like, you're totally wrecked. I'm like, I could do it. 28 minutes, I took the cylinder head off. The whole garage was cheering. Yeah! And then, so we look in there, and, you know, the pistons, because one guy said, he's like, I think you blew a piston apart. And so one piston, we push on it, it's okay. Second piston, push it through. Third piston, I push on it, it goes, and everyone goes, oh, shit. Oh. So that was that. But I ended up getting a junkyard motor up at Loudon. We put it in. We got the car going for like the last couple of hours on Sunday. And then Yuri, and I'm sure you guys know Yuri. I come help you again. We built the car again. We built the car again. We, you know, fixed up whatever. I couldn't keep using that motor. Something was wrong with that engine. So we ended up putting another engine in the car. I think cause I sanded the head with like a wire wheel. I flattened that out, you know? So yeah, it was a little sketchy build. So yeah, we put together something nicer and we became friends and he started, and then he's like, you know, I want to drive. And this was like, I wasn't as serious back then. I was like, yeah, sure, you can drive. And he got his stuff and he actually is a reasonable driver. I mean, he's not like, you know, Dale Earnhardt out there, but he's pretty good. He's actually a pretty safe driver. And so, you know, we raced together for a very long time until he decided he wanted to build his own car. And now he's got like three or four. I told him from day one, I'm like, don't do it. Don't do it. I'm like, just drive with me. It's so much better. And he tells me all the time, he's like, I should have never done this. But here he is.
You want our Yuri story?
Sure.
So we invited Yuri onto the podcast. And he's like, oh, I would love that. I'd love that. And now he keeps emailing Chris and Chrissy and Jeff and Mental saying, when can I come on? When can I come on? So I haven't told him yet that we're not the same podcast. So I might do it this season. No, it's quite fun though. I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah, Yuri is a character. Yuri is definitely one of the most interesting people I know. But I mean, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have the car wouldn't run. I mean, the 07K swap I mostly did myself. Building the Golf, building the Fox multiple times, especially building the Golf, because we literally the Golf we brought to my old house. I put it up on my quick jacks and we literally removed every single bolt from the car. Everything was removed from that car and put back on by either me or Yuri or my friend Phil. Put the car back together. Oh, and my friend Chris, who built the cage on the Fox, he did the cage on the Golf. We did a mountain of work on that car to get it running for Lemons for the race before the race that was in the Hoopties movie. If it wasn't for Yuri, I wouldn't, I wouldn't have had the car. He helped me a lot with the 16 valve. We kind of got it running together. It still blew up anyway. We've done a lot. We've done a lot of crazy stuff together.
Mm-hmm. And had a good time doing it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Miss Vicky.
I know it's time.
Time.
It is. So we're going to do a couple of the Fast and Furious story time questions, if you're up for it.
Sure.
We kind of get to know you a little better than we already do.
I was going to say, it's more for the audience.
We know him pretty well.
I think we got this one.
Listeners in Kenya will get to know you a lot better.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Yeah. Could become a delicacy there. So.
All right. I'll let you guys start it.
Okay. It seems to be the one I keep going to first time. Tom, what is your race car number? Why? And do your cars have names?
I've given cars names. Well, let's start with the number. So the number is 14. Why it's 14, I don't know. We were four in the first race, and then the second Lemons race, four was taken, so we put a one in front of it and it became 14, and it's been 14 ever since. Yeah. That's basically the reason it's 14. I don't even know why we picked four, to be honest with you. It was just like a whatever. And do my cars have names? I used to call my truck Gigantor. Considering this is a family show, I'm not going to tell you what I call the Golf.
It depends on which lap, right?
Yeah, it depends on which lap.
Yeah, just yeah. Is it a letter?
It's a bunch of letters. It's a bunch of angrily screamed letters.
Yes.
They're all short words, though. It's fine.
And I used to name cars. I haven't really named other than I used to call the truck Gigantor because it is. It's like freaking. It's a 2500 HD, 8-foot bed, extended cab. It's like parking the Queen Mary. It's crazy.
I was going to say you dock that thing.
Yeah.
All right. So what is the one thing that no one knows about you that would surprise them, or at least most people?
One thing that nobody knows about me that would surprise them.
Do you have a hidden talent?
Do I have a hidden talent? Well, I can do this.
Like you stick his
tongue. I can twirl my tongue. No. I was trying to think of what people would know would.
Weird hobbies.
Yeah.
Weird hobbies.
Anything. Something that would surprise people.
I'm a huge Sonic the Hedgehog fan.
Nice. That's a good one.
Huge. In fact, let me show you right now. I'm wearing Sonic the Hedgehog slippers right now.
There you go.
So you will actually, it can be given away if you look very closely at the dash of my race car. There is a little Sonic the Hedgehog and Tails running on the dash bar on my race car. But yeah. My mom bought me a Genesis in 1990 with Sonic. We didn't have a lot of money, so it was like huge for my mom to buy this. I wanted it so bad. I played a billion hours of that game. And to this day, I love Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Jeremy,
Tom.
Go. She's on mute, Jeremy. This is your chance.
All right. So, what was your first car? What we already know what the best car you've ever owned was the Alpha, but what is the worst car that you've ever owned?
Ooh, that's a good question. I've had a lot of really bad cars. So the first car I ever owned, which is not a good car, but definitely does not qualify as my worst car, was a, 89 89 Chevy Cavalier. It was a four-cylinder automatic. It couldn't get out of its own way, but you know what? It was a good car. I ruined it pretty much, you know, trying to soup it up and whatnot. But it was a good car. That was my first and last foray into body work. I actually tried to clean up the paint. I had a lot of like nicks and whatever, and then get it painted at Mako for $300. And it had more waves than the ocean. So yeah, it was pretty bad. But my worst car, that's a tough one. Let's see.
Unfortunately, it's not that tough.
Can I give you more than one?
I was going to say it's the tough part's narrowing it down, right?
I got two that I can say. So first, at one point, I had a Grand National. It got stolen. So I bought off my friend this 86 IROC Z. And as I'm driving it home, the front underneath the front bumper just fell on the ground and started sparking. And it was sparking, 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 sparking. And then I started to smell fuel because the fuel pump was leaking, like as I was driving it home. And then a whole bunch of other, the car just shut off in the middle of the road. We had to jump start it. We got it going. And I just needed to be able to get to school. So I literally drove it back to my friend's house and he gave me my money back and I just gave him back the car. Then my friend was like, I have a K5 Blazer that you could buy. So these cars are related to each other now. Because now the next thing I buy is this K5 Blazer for my friend.
This guy doesn't sound like a really good friend so far.
Different friend.
Oh, okay. It's not the same guy. Okay.
He's like, it's got cold air conditioning. It's great. It just needs a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know, whatever. Fine. So I buy this thing. Yeah, AC's cold. I drive it home. Yeah, it was pretty good. Ran a little off. He's like, I would do a tune-up, whatever. I spark plugs, whatnot. Put a radio in it, cleaned it up, some cheap floor mats, whatever. And so I'm driving it, and it, you know, still runs kind of crappy, but it was okay. And I'm driving home with my friends, and all of a sudden it starts to run really bad. And we make it to my house, we get out, and there's flames pouring from underneath it. So I don't know if you guys knew this, but I was a volunteer firefighter up until this year. And my buddy was also a volunteer firefighter. He's like, I'm going to call it in right now. And I'm like, do not call the firehouse. They are going to trash on us. They're going to make fun of me. I don't want anyone to know that my truck is on fire in front of my house. So we grab my hose, my neighbor's hose, and we put it out. It was just an exhaust fire. And what had happened was one of the cylinders was just straight up dead. And, well, it was going. The rings were going. I don't know what the hell was wrong with, but something was going bad. And it just let go and just dumped a ton of fuel into the exhaust and that was it. It was on fire. So we put it out. My other friend gets back in the car for some reason and pulls on the seatbelt and rips the seatbelt where it was mounted right off the side of the car. So now it's got a rot hole where the seatbelt mounts. I'm like, oh my God, this thing's just a straight up death trap. So again, I actually have pretty good friends because my friend who I bought this from, I call him the next day and I explain the whole situation and he's like, oh man. So he comes over, another friend comes over, and we realize that it's got a dead cylinder, it's rotted out on the side here, whatever. And so he was like, I'll give you your money back. He gave me money back, he towed it away, he junked it. That was it. So
you've been doing this pre-Lemons, Tom.
Oh yeah, I was Lemons before it was cool. Yeah. Yeah.
It is your turn.
What do you feel that you excel at on track and what do you feel still needs work? Go ahead.
I was going to say, I excel at spatial awareness. I know where I am at all times and I know where I'm putting the car at all times. Like I said, I like to call myself as like a joke about the gentleman driver. I like to think of myself as kind of a gentleman on track. I generally don't hit anybody. It is Lemons, so, you know, whatever. But, you know, I know when to give room. I know where to give room. I'm very good at knowing where the car is, where is safe, where is not safe, and where I can make passes and not make passes, get out of the way, whatever the case may be, depending upon where it is. So I think I'm very good at that. I feel like I have... I I still have some consistency issues. I got better for a while, and then, you know, between COVID and getting older and kids and whatever, I kind of went down. The sim racing helps a lot. But, you know, I'm just, I started Lemons Racing. I was 29. I'm 43 now. And, you know, I mean, things have changed. My fitness has changed since then. So I have been working out a lot more. So that helps my fitness. And I feel like I'm more consistent when I'm more fit. But, you know, things like using the whole track, I have to remind myself to use the whole track. You know, breaking points, things like that, you know, not necessarily fundamental, but like the best breaking point, and remembering that, yeah, I was breaking there before, but I know I could do it better now. So do it better now, next time and next time and next time. Mm-hmm. And now it's an hour and a half later. And I'm like, and I go back to my old breaking point. I'm like, no, I have big fat Will Woods on the car now. I could break there. I don't need to break here. You know, and again, it's like I said, we're not professionals. You know, it is what it is. It's the kind of thing that kind of happens. That's my excuse anyway. I just call myself old.
You don't get out there as much as you would if you could. So it's hard when you only get out there a few times. So
exactly.
All right.
Again, that's why I do a lot of the sim racing stuff. The sim racing really, really helps.
I could see that. I'd love to have a sim racer. That would be great. We have one. We just haven't put it together. Okay. So this one I've been looking forward to since we said you would you agreed to come on. What car would you love to switch into that you have raced against in the past, and at what track?
So basically you can take the driver out of whatever car you want, and you get in the driver's seat and you drive that track, that car on whatever particular track.
That's a good question. Track would have to be, like tracks that I race on normally, are we saying?
Well, you can take the car anywhere you want. You just have to have raced against it.
Okay. A track car that I've raced against. That's a tough one. So, you know, I've driven an E36 before. I raced Tom says E36. He's a Dream Team guy. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, Flat Earth.
Yeah, the Flat Earth car, which was a great car. But Amanda's E36, there's something different about the car. And yes, I will admit the E36 is the easy button. It really is, because that car, you wear that car like a pair of running shoes. But there, I don't know what it is about her car, but I want to drive that, and I don't care where I'm driving it. I think I would have a good time in that car, because I can forget about my deficiencies and use the car, and I feel like I could get myself to my potential in a car that has no deficiencies. So, you know, it's maybe a boring answer, but
that's okay.
Anybody who's in the Northeast racing Lemons, you got to be in awe of that car, because a lot of E36 show up and not a lot of them get very far, and she just crushes with that car. And part of it is Amanda is just a fantastic driver, a fantastic mechanic. So, you know, that helps quite a bit. But that car is just dialed in perfect.
Yep. It is. We've been beaten by, all of us have been beaten by that car many, many times.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back, but I believe, Tom, that was my answer as well, was Amanda's car at Pit Race.
Yeah. Like I said, E36 is boring, but it's not that it's an E36. It's that E36, because it is perfect. It's a perfect E36.
Seems to be.
Hmm.
Jeremy, what you got?
All right. No one else on here is going to ask. Jeremy Hammond.
May. Matt. Chris.
Who?
Other.
Clarkson.
Wait. Yeah, you said Jeremy Hammond. I'm like, who's Jeremy?
I'm sorry. Clarkson, Hammond.
He's got commas in there. Stuck. They got stuck in the beard.
Clarkson. I love the stupid shit he's like, just, you know, it's like my genius knows no bounds. I say stuff like that all the time. I really do. I say the kinds of things that he says often, when, you know, especially when the car's breaking or something like that, or the car's actually working.
He's a relatable a-hole.
He's a relatable a-hole. Yeah. I don't yell at people. I don't abuse people like he does. Yeah.
You might not be as creative with your license plates. It's fine. It's
yeah.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is the car from your family or when you were young in the neighborhood that sticks out in your mind?
You know, so my dad had a 69 Roadrunner. He bought brand new in 1969. And he had that car for about a year and a half. He sold it to his cousin. And one day he's driving to work and he sees this blue, it was a Blue Fire Metallic. So a Blue Fire Metallic Roadrunner on the side of the road, ripped in half. And firewall forward is over there and the rest of the car is over there.
Yeah.
That looks like my old car. He gets to work. Your cousin got into an accident. He's okay though. The car is destroyed. So the car was demolished, right? So fast forward to 2005. My mom wanted to buy my dad a big gift, so I found one in Alabama.
No way.
And we bought it. $7,500. I mean, it needed everything. It needed to be completely rebuilt, but we bought this thing for $7,500, had it chipped up. It actually ran and drove really poorly, but it ran and drove. And we took it apart. Me and my dad took it apart, and we started to build the car. And you know, a few years later, I moved out. I started building the Fox, you know, building it became whatever. We were building it in his driveway. So we weren't even like, so on top of whatever we would have done, we would have had to pay somebody to do the body work and whatever. It got to the point that we could have paid somebody to finish it for less money than it would have cost us to finish it.
Yeah.
And not only that, they were like, they didn't want to put the money into it. They were like, are you going to finish it? I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to finish it. I don't live here anymore. So we sold it. And that was the end of that. So I feel bad about the whole thing. I kind of wanted to do it again. But then recently my dad had a Charger, a 2008 Charger. It was like a V6, whatever, that he drove around. The engine blew. And he's got some money in the bank saved up and whatever. And cause when my mom passed away, whatever. And I go, Dad, I know we can't do the Roadrunner again, but let's get you something fun. And he's like, well, maybe we'll just get another V6, whatever. I'm like, no, we're not doing that. So we got him a 2022 Challenger Scat Pack, and he loves it. And that, and so it all kind of worked out in the end, right? And that's car is his hobby. That's his thing. He cleans it, he keeps it nice and whatever, drives it around, and he loves the thing. So it really worked out.
Excellent. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So my last one for this episode, future episodes, we save more. Jennifer's not here. Her favorite question is, what is your favorite car from a movie or car movie of all time? Could be TV too.
Favorite car from a car movie of all time? Probably Kit, Knight Rider.
Nice.
That was my big, I was a big Trans Am guy. I've owned a lot of Trans Ams. That was my car right there. I one of those things I thought about, maybe one day I'll build one. I'm not going to build one. It's never going to happen. But, that was my car. That was with the General Lee a close second. But, yeah.
Okay. All right. Miss Vicky, you got your last one for the evening?
I do. Let me pick a good one. What is your most memorable car breakdown on the road or track?
Most memorable car breakdown on the road or track. Let's see. There's been a lot of them.
There's been a lot.
I don't know. There's been a lot of them we've done on.
Just say yes.
The K5 on fire was awesome.
Yeah, the K5 on fire. Yeah, that wasn't good. My most memorable one was probably the story I related earlier. That was the we blew the motor up in practice and rebuilt it overnight and got the car back and came in seventh overall. And Lemons used to have a Grassroots Motorsports. It was the most from the least award. Because funny enough, I think we were in C or we might have been in B, and we somehow still got beaten. We didn't actually came in second, even coming in seventh overall, second in B, I guess it was at the time, or maybe C. And so they were like, we got to give these guys something. So they gave us the most from the least award from Grassroots Motorsports. So that was pretty awesome.
I can see that.
All right, Tom, front wheel drive, rear-wheel drive or four-wheel drive? Or does it even matter?
Doesn't matter. I'll race anything. I mean, each one has its own merits. I mean, a lot of people hate front-wheel drive. I like front-wheel drive. I can make, you know, I do some weird things sometimes that make, but I make the car dance, and I know how to do that. In a front-wheel drive car, I'm probably better racing in a front-wheel drive car just because I do it a hell of a lot more than I've raced rear drive. But you know, rear-wheel drive has its other, you know, advantages and aspects, especially on the street. you know, in terms of you want to be a hooligan, which I am. You know, all-wheel drive's cool. And I've had a lot of fun in some all-wheel drive cars, and stuff. I've never raced one, but you know, I do enjoy them, especially, you know, being a hooligan in the snow. But yeah, it doesn't matter to me. I have nothing against any of them. Each one has its own, you know, merits for anything, really.
Pretty cool. So, Tom, you survived one episode so far. I'm sure we'll drag you back on here once or twice. In case people want to keep up with you, in case they want to see how you're going, see the exploits, hopefully not see any more engine swaps at the track.
Well, so I'm on Instagram. I race crappy cars on Instagram. I race crappy cars on YouTube. I race crappy cars on Twitch, which is right now where I live stream from the track, although I might be switching that to YouTube. So either one. And I have a Facebook page for the team. If you go facebook.com/farfromwinning, that's the page for the team. I haven't done a lot of updates recently because I've been kind of, after swapping the subframe out, we broke the subframe at Loudon. I've been kind of taking it slow, finishing the car, but the car, you know, I put a lot of car stuff up, especially my Instagram. I put a lot of car, not just race car stuff, but other car stuff up on there.
I would ask why it says you race crappy cars, but I guess that was the whole episode. So we'll just let that one go.
Yeah, it should be obvious.
Tom, way overdue. Glad you agreed to come on. It was great fun. And we will see you at New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you guys very much. And yeah, look forward to the next time.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, man.
So that wasn't so bad, sir.
That was a lot of fun. That was a good one.
It was fun. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I'm happy to come on whenever you guys want. You know, I've never been on Everyone Racers either. So.
Yeah.
Not many people have. It's a very select few.
They don't do a lot of guests.
They don't do a lot of guests.
Well, so, you know, I've been on there like in the background because, you know, they do the video stuff. So I've been in a lot of their like I've mentioned on the show a lot. I'm in the background of some of the videos a lot, but I've never been like a guest on there or anything like that. They don't really do guests. They just kind of talk. It's more of a.
Now I talked to them about it and they're like, well, you guys do it well. So we're not going to, that's kind of our thing. So,
you know what? They're really good at doing like the whole layout of what's going on with Lemons and then what's going on in other areas of motorsports.
Yep.
Yeah.
We don't really get
into that.
They have
like a shtick. They have a shtick that's like a whole, you know, it's more of a talk show kind of
format,
you know, like The View.
Yeah.
The View for racing.
Yeah.
The other thing they have that we don't have is that all the hosts there are willing to do like research away from the podcast. We don't have that luxury here.
Bill does all the research.
Yeah, there's not a lot of homework that's done prepping for this. You know, it's like, Bill, did you make a doc for this? Yes, I did.
Yeah.
See?
Well, yes, you know, Bill is like management anyway. So he's in front of a computer. I'm not in front of a computer a ton.
Bill's an engineer, so he's super organized.
Yeah, he really is.
And he does it very well.
Oh, Jeremy's sucking up. He must need a part.
No, you need a part from me.
That's true. I do need a part. Yeah. I need an airbox from the E46. That's right. Don't forget me either. Tom, could you send over some pictures when you get a chance? And we'll, you got a few weeks. This one's going to come out, I think, third week in April, if I remember right. So You got what, plenty just of like time.
Me at the pictures track of or something.
You, family, cars, whatever.
You at the track. You with, you know, whatever, anything.
No, it, no nudity, right? Or
well,
nudity
I mean, allowed. You can send them. I'm not going to use them, but you know, if you want to scratch my corneas or you know, make me have you know trauma and go to see therapy, I mean, you can do whatever you want, Tom.
Well, I know nope. Jonah.
yeah, we do need to have Jonah on. That would be fun.
Jeremy would want it. Yeah, you should have. Actually, it would be funny to have me and Jonah at the same time. I think we could play off each other pretty well.
Well, yeah. So I'm sure Jeremy wouldn't mind. Tagging along as well. So,
well, yeah, you know, and the three of us actually,
all the Volkswagen dudes.
Yeah, we get we get pretty funny. I think about it. I didn't even mention like Jonah. Like, literally, I met him at New Hampshire. He was like, "Oh, you got that Volkswagen? Yeah, I do." Blah blah blah, and instant friends, and now we race everything together. So, that's how Lemons goes.
Yeah. It does. I think if you're at the track and you have a Volkswagen, you're going to meet Jonah.
Yeah.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jonah's life revolves around Volkswagen.
Yeah. But it's funny because he'll trash on them just as hard as anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, these things are giant pieces of shit, but I love them and I have 10 of them.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun, though.
He's got some sick cars, though. I mean, and you know what? Obviously, Jeremy has known him longer than I have. He's got a lot of experience. He's been dealing with race cars and stuff for a very long time. He's been on professional race teams as a mechanic, and a crew member and whatnot. And he's got some pretty cool, he's got Jetta TDI Cup, a couple of them, and car and whatnot. And so, yeah, he'd be an interesting guy. And like I said, it would be pretty cool to have the three of us on. I think we play off each other pretty well.
Well,
and I'll tell you, that TDI Cup car is ridiculous on track. It is so freaking fast. It's so much fun to drive.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. Jonah is one of the fastest drivers in Lemons, I would say. He is a monster. So he makes it look even crazier, you know?
Yeah.
So. Indeed. We need to do that. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Don't want to keep you all night. It was great having you on, Tom. And don't know why it took us so long, but, you know, it's... sometimes you're just like, oh wait, we haven't had them on yet. Duh. So
send over some photos.
Will do. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you guys having me. I really do.
It was fun. It was a good time.
It was fun.
It was good seeing you again. And you're good not going to be at Pitt though, right?
Not at Pitt, but I will be.
Okay, we'll see you in New Jersey.
So, yeah, you gotta go to Pitt with that V-dub.
You do. Or
so freaking fast there.
Someday.
It's a long drive for him, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's 8 hours towing. That's the issue for me. You know, like right now, so April's, there are certain months at work that are hard. So April's a bad month. July's a bad month and October's a bad month at work. So October I go to Loudoun anyway, cause I'm like, look, I'm racing. Like I do this job to afford racing. So that's it.
Yeah.
but you know, I try not to do too much of whatever. And that on top of that, with the 8 hours, I would need to like take extra days off, and it's kind of tough with April.
Yeah.
But you know, first off, unless this car burns to the ground, I have so much time and whatever invested into it, I'm gonna have it for a while. So maybe in a couple of years, you know, things change up or whatever, then I might have the time to go there with it.
Yeah. If you said July is bad for you.
July is bad. I mean, I'm actually still going to try and go to Palmer with Jonah with the for the Northeast GT, but that's easier because he's bringing the car and I could just drive up there, go, and then go home. So yeah,
because there's a July event at Pit Race that we go to every year. So, but if that's a bad month too, that doesn't help you either.
Yeah, it's July is tough. It's just like I run all the financial systems at this company, and we close the quarters. There's just a lot going on, and they are overly reliant on me, which is good when it comes to salary negotiation. So they pay me very well, which is nice. It allows me to pay for my toys, but you know, unfortunately limits my schedule in certain times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate when work gets in the way of fun, but it happens.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, sir. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Right.
Have a good night.
Tom, we'll see you soon, buddy. Talk to you later.